Hey, thanks for spending time with me. Rusnowski here. This is Porchlight. When I'm engaging a person in conversation about their past, I rely on a simple reminder to help me imagine their journey through time. To get here, you first had to go through there. It's really just simple math. Say you're in your 60s. Tell me about the first time you heard the Beatles, or did you witness the moon landing on TV? Sometimes the answers that come from those who didn't participate at all prove to be the most interesting, but generally it's a predictable path. Of course, I was there too. So even better when I can engage someone who will report from an age and perspective far removed from mine. When I was beginning to research the Hometown series in the mid-1990s, my very oldest interview subjects got these questions. Tell me about the first time you remember seeing an airplane or an automobile. Did your family have a telephone when you were growing up? On this episode of Porchlight, we'll consider the 20s, not the era, the age. Exploration, identity, a fair share of formative experiences. Many of you listening to me survived it all, and you're still here. Congratulations. So, a question for you to ponder. How many decisions did you make during that decade, intentional or otherwise, that have influenced your life ever since? I hope you have some compassion for that restless soul back there. After all, what did they know? They were just beginning to understand themselves. And they sure wouldn't recognize you.
May God bless and keep you always. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung, and may you stay. May your heart always be joyful. May your song always be sung. And may you stay forever young.
watching.
He's the youth of a thousand summers. He's the youth of a thousand summers. Like a sweet bird of youth, like a sweet bird of youth. In my soul, in my soul, in my soul. In my soul, in my soul, in my soul. And it looks so radiant, and it shines like the sun. And it looks so radiant, and it lights up the world. He's the youth of a thousand summers. He's the youth of a thousand summers. Like a sweet bird of youth, like a sweet bird of youth. In my soul, in my soul, in my soul. My soul, in my soul, in my soul.
Bob Dylan and the Band. Nice wish going forward, though I've played that song at memorial services before. Then, Van the Man, the title based on ancient mystical teachings. Wonderful image, isn't it? The youth of a thousand summers. Hope for the future. Well, the stories in media and the hashtags are one thing, but I have been genuinely inspired by the number of courageous and ambitious young women I have had the privilege to meet recently. Carson Martin is certainly one. These women are aware of the present-day challenges and historic impediments that provide obstacles particular to their gender, facing them squarely, just like women always have. Yes. They stand on the shoulders of those that precede them, but they are able to maintain their balance as well. Steady on.
Well, I was born in Monterey, California, in 1995. I'm a youngin'. I moved to Indiana when I was about 8 or so, and I'm here now. It was a bit of a culture shock. And then as I've come into my adult life, I have broadened my interests. And I think that I have been carving more of a niche where I meet really interesting people who I love talking to. I see a side of Bloomington out-of-state students, people who aren't from here, wouldn't get to experience.
Carson, tell me about your family.
I have a little sister. She's 21. My mom is from the Netherlands. My dad is from Indy. And so when we had moved from California to Indiana, I felt like this is going to be an interesting change of pace. My mom hadn't really spent much time here. But I saw my family in a different light because we're all responding to this big life change anyway. So a lot of my peers' parents were much younger. And so I just thought it was weird that you would want to have kids and get married and all those things in your 20s. It was definitely something that made me think differently. A lot of people who have maybe more traditional views have the idea of like a timeline as to when you want to get married and when you want to have kids. And my parents didn't really follow that schema. And so I've really never been shocked or had a problem with anyone doing really any of these things. So I'm very close with my sister. I work with my mom at the book corner. So we have a pretty good relationship. It's very open and I'm pretty comfortable. Some of my best friends are actually people I went to high school with and I still talk to them every day. We're all doing very different things now. And I just love seeing how our relationship transcends all of our other circumstances. I don't really have any of those friends in Bloomington anymore. They've all moved. They've gotten totally different jobs, and it's been really wonderful to see them progress. I get to see them grow and become comfortable with themselves. I've got a friend who's getting his doctorate. I have a friend who just bought a house, and we're all in different places, and it's just so great to see how we've all developed as people. And there are other people in my life who expect me to be at this age planning something like that. There is an expectation that I have these particular goals because of my age. And I don't think that there are any universal laws that would say I have to do that. It always blew my mind that this was like a prescribed plan for people. I definitely have been surprised by a few people. I had some friends in high school. They were really happy to start a family. They are just so enjoying their lives. You know, seeing what characteristics did change and how people matured is really cool. You have really immature friends sometimes who you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen when you grow up? And you just see them come into their own. They're still them, but you know, they managed to build something for themselves that I don't think anyone would have expected.
I know you have a great affection for books. Could you tell me about how that started when you were young and what your present relationship is with reading?
I was always involved in like the reading programs in elementary school, and this is going to sound very standard of my age group, but I was so into Harry Potter. It was one of my favorite series, and it's because we were at an age where we could absolutely relate to the characters. We were growing up at the same time they were. Even as an adult now, I love reading fiction. Sometimes reality is so interesting, and other times you're like, I don't like it. And I just love being able to just open a book, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm not here anymore. Now I'm in this story, and I can just watch all this happen. I don't think that I can pick one niche that I'm super into because it depends on the mood. If anyone asks me for a book recommendation, I find it difficult because I want to know, well, what do you want to feel when you're reading? Where do you want your head to be? What kind of mood are you in? Those are all things I have to consider before I pick up a book. I think that's how a lot of people get into reading 10 different books at a time, is because it's really hard to just pick one.
Is that what you do?
That is exactly what I do. There are things that have taken me like 2 years to finish, but I'm still glad that I finished them. I'm glad that I didn't just eat it all up at once.
Now you know how unique this is for someone in their mid-20s. To be spending hours with pages instead of a screen. Are you aware of that difference? Do you sense that yourself?
I am definitely not immune from the distractions that just having your phone in front of you can bring. You can set it aside, you can turn it face down, but it's there. You know, just scrolling through social media seems so mindless. You see a little piece of everyone's lives that they want to throw out on the internet that may not even come close to describing any facet of themselves. So not only is it distracting because there's all this information out there, is it even accurate? Do I even know this person? It's a great way to avoid things, is to just look at a screen. And I definitely had to rediscover that and force myself into a more disciplined situation. And I totally understand people's anxiety when they feel like they're missing out on something, that they need to be there to witness everything. They've got their phones out to take a video of whatever, or they need to be, you know, constantly checking their news feed because they don't want to miss anything. Everyone knows this, but it's easy to forget or to just feel differently. That news is always going to be there. It's on the internet and it's there forever. So you can come back to it. In the days before a cell phone, there was no obligation to be available like that. You would call your friend's house. If they weren't home, you try again later or ask their parents to have them call you back. The expectation that you need to be available at 3 a.m. because I can text you is kind of crazy. And things can definitely seem much less personal. But I have met plenty of people who don't babysit their phone, and it's just so cool to see other people sitting and like thinking or watching something happen instead of just looking down at their phone. Being comfortable doing that is kind of hard now. If you're not sitting there looking at your phone, then you probably look weird because you're, I don't know, living in the moment.
I want to ask about the media that you interact with. We talked about books and the fact that you don't use a Kindle. You actually have a physical book in your hands. How do you access movies? Do you go to the movies?
I actually don't go to the movies. And this is where, you know, the convenience of streaming comes in place. If I want to get up and go get a snack or something, I can pause it and I don't have to worry about missing anything. I watch movies on Netflix or on DVD or on Hulu. I just enjoy having the convenience of, you know, I control when I watch this and where. And I hardly even watch cable or anything like that anymore, just because when something's on and I don't want to watch it, I don't watch it. But maybe I want to watch it later.
What about music?
Music is another thing that I'm really grateful to have that convenience, because if I don't know the song or I don't know the artist, there's an app on my phone where I can just play a sample of the song or try to remember bits and pieces of it, and it'll conjure up a song that I'm like, oh yeah, this is it. So that's really cool. And I have the convenience of being able to store all of these songs on my phone and listen to them wherever my phone's at. So having the opportunity, especially because I don't necessarily have one favorite type of music, I love being able to discover the music and just have it automatically, that instant gratification. I don't know, the internet's a big, big place. You can discover all kinds of music.
Today you're wearing a Ramones t-shirt.
I am.
The Ramones recorded in the late 70s. That's a long time ago in your life. It wasn't until I was older than you are now that I became aware and had an affection for music that preceded that by a couple decades. And you're talking about an affection for music that was nearly 50 years ago. Could you talk about that relationship that you have?
My parents have very different tastes in music from each other. So there was always music playing at the house. We always had something going on where we were listening to music. If I want to pull up a song from 1980, I can immediately. I have the freedom to explore all kinds of different types of music through this medium now. I might find a song that I just really enjoy. And I think that's cool that we have that ability now. I don't have to wait for it to play on the radio. I don't have to wait until I can use my allowance money to buy a CD. I can just have it. It's not that I don't enjoy some really irritating pop music sometimes, things that are really catchy. I really appreciate hearing people experiencing things that were before cell phones and before this form of technology really took a hold and touched all of our lives in all different aspects. It's such an organic experience. So even if it's a song that you're like, I really can't relate to this, there's still an element of how authentic it is that this person is writing, having fully experienced this moment or this feeling. I love those authentic emotions. Hearing people like Joan Osborne and Alanis Morissette and Fleetwood Mac is great. I love Stevie Nicks. I just love hearing people from a time where they just experience things differently from us.
Rock, rock, rock away, bitch. Rock, rock, rock away, bitch.
Hey, nice to be with you. You're listening to Porchlight with Tom Rusnowski. Production support for this program comes from Smithville at smithville.com and from Gilbert Construction, remodeling homes since 1994.
Upon a star, wondering how far in life I'd go. Was quite a dreamer, climbing to the top. I had no time to stop, and I did not know that someday I'd look back and understand everything I wanted was always there at hand. Take my time and I'd learn how to live each day and make it count. If I knew then what I know now. Thought I was lucky when fortune came my way. Guess everyone could say I had it made, but life was empty and time was passing by. So I asked myself why I should feel this way, and I found out what matters in the end. Sometimes a second chance will never come again. If I knew then what I know now, I'd take my time and I'd learn how to live each day and make it count. If I knew then what I know. If I knew then what I know.
dressing rooms are great. To come on strong, and it ain't too long for to make you feel a man. But love is blind, and you soon will find you're just a boy again. I wish that I knew what I know now. When I was younger, I wish that I knew what.
We started with some lingering tailpipe exhaust from the Ramones. So impressed that Carson is listening to them. Hey, I was there and knew less about them than she does now, which in a twisted, convoluted way leads to Barry and Holly Tashian. Barry speaking there from a deep well of musical and life experiences. One thing he can truly say about his 20s, I opened for the Beatles. Rod Stewart has fathered 8 children by 5 different women, spanning a period of almost half a century. Oh, I think that gives him the right to sing that song with conviction, although I will note that a recent photograph of the Rod father with his spouses shows all smiling faces. A small framed portrait, a lighted candle, corner shrine for one William Monkhouse Jr. There is much evidence to suggest that for a few rare individuals, a potent mixture of place and time applied very early in life can chart the entire voyage. Combine certainty and curiosity with a magical place and time, well, then sky's the limit, and who needs the sky anyway? William Monkhouse Jr. was a faculty kid in Bloomington, Indiana, at the beginning of the 20th century. Monkhouse Sr. was professor of zoology at the university. Clear indications that the relationship between them might have been somewhat strained. As soon as Junior hit adolescence, he was shipped off to prep school in Zurich, Switzerland. Prep for just what exactly was never quite determined, since most of young William's education came from outside the classroom. In the late winter of 1916, two individuals in Zurich with avant-garde sensibilities, Hugo Ball and Emmy Hennings, opened the Cabaret Voltaire, an artistic nightclub. Performances in dance, music, poetry, all with an edge that reflected the intense conversations about art taking place among the patrons. The post-war movement known as Dada, which would change the rules for all creative art in the 20th century, was essentially born here. Little William Monkhouse Jr., all of 14 years old, somehow found his way there. First to the address on Spiegelgasse, then directions beyond. Returning to Bloomington once the war broke out, Monk, as he was soon known, became a missionary of sorts, a Hoosier Dadaist. Not really conceivable, but that's the point, isn't it? By his early 20s, Monk was a gifted musician, an experimental poet, and a six-foot-tall provocateur. Among his partners in creative crime, one Hoagland Carmichael, and another musical prodigy by way of Davenport, Iowa, Leon Bix Beiderbecke. Influence? Well, we know Monk introduced Hoagy to Tchaikovsky and Ravel, but his contribution was probably more attitude than substance. That tends to scatter with the strong winds of time. As it turned out, all three would soon separate for distant horizons. Bix to fame, Hoagy to fame and fortune, and William Jr. to teach at the Detroit Conservatory. Detroit, Michigan in 1931 is where William Monkhouse Jr. would die suddenly, still a young man. Like Bix or Hank Williams or James Dean, Monk was an old soul who would never get out of his 20s. It seems you never do get out when you're always trying to escape.
For a number that I've been doing for quite some time. It was a song made popular by people like Jack Teagarden, Ethel Waters, Mildred Bailey, and some wonderful people. Right now I'd like to do 100 Years From Today. Got you. 1, 2, thank you. Don't save your kisses, just pass them around. You'll find my reason to be logically sound. Who's gonna know that you passed them around 100 years from today? Why crave a penthouse that's fit for a queen? You're near to heaven on Mother Earth's green. If you had millions, what would they all mean 100 years from today? So laugh and sing and make love the key. Be happy while you may. There's only one beneath the sun that's bound to make you feel that way. The moon is shining, and that's a good sign. Cling to me closer and say you'll be mine. Remember, darling, we won't see it shine 100 years from today. Thank you. How about that, Miss Scott? Yeah. So laugh and sing, make love the king, be happy while you may. There's only one beneath the sun that's bound to make you feel that way. The moon is shining, and that's a good sign. Cling to me closer and say you'll be mine. Remember, darling, we won't see it shine 100 years from today.
It was Maxine Sullivan, recorded in front of an appreciative audience over in Tokyo at the Fujitsu Concord Jazz Festival back in 1986. Scott Hamilton on tenor saxophone, our own John Bunch on piano, Chris Florey on guitar, Phil Flanagan on bass, and Chuck Riggs on drums, an album on the Concord label entitled Swingin' Sweet. Indeed, she was on a beautiful old standard, beloved, I guess you can say, by Ned Washington and Victor Young. 100 years from today.
Nelson Riddle's composition, Route 66. Two guys in their 20s traveling around America in a sports car trying to understand life. Every one of the 116 script locations were actually filmed on location. And in this case, Youngstown, Ohio. Darren McGavin guest stars as Johnny Coppa. You don't want to miss the episode with Coleman Hawkins on sax.
Well, we stay on Poland Avenue. That takes us into South Avenue. Then we cross the Mahoning onto Wood Street, and that's where the arena's supposed to be.
And Johnny Coppa.
Look, if this guy's so important, how come you never mentioned him before? It's been a lot of years, you know, 10, 11.
Well, I hope it's worth it. You know, Youngstown is not exactly on our course.
Look, if somebody said to you you could take a detour to see Caesar or Napoleon, wouldn't you take that detour? Caesar, Napoleon, those are the big guys you met in books. Me? I met my own kings face to face in the back alleys. Who's Napoleon compared to Tony Gardella? The first guy that closed both my eyes with one punch. Who's Caesar compared to Flip Mahoney, the guy that knocked out my baby teeth? Those were the kings, my kings. Those were the tough guys that walked down the streets like dinosaurs. But compared to Johnny Coppa, they were nothing, nowhere. He put them all down. It says in the paper here that Johnny fights this Friday. And that's something I gotta see.
For this postcard home, the postmark reads Edinburgh, Scotland. If you consider added time to be the greatest wealth, we humans are a fortunate species indeed. Our current average lifespan of 72 years breaks down to over 26,000 days, however you might spend them. And the numbers have definitely gone up since we stopped using all our waking hours hunting for food. Other mammals don't have this luxury, and it's reflected in their life expectancies. Giraffes, bison, and moose survive between 20 to 25 years in the wild. The 18 to 20 years that polar bears are generally given now includes the added challenge of their natural habitats diminishing from the retreating continental ice shelf. Approximately 20,000 polar bears living in the regions near the Arctic Circle. It's anticipated that two-thirds of them may disappear over the next 30 years. perhaps it would surprise you that polar bears that spend their lives in captivity tend to live longer. Not as many weather extremes or fights with rivals over mates. But here, too, the numbers are diminishing. The very last polar bear living in captivity in the United Kingdom was being displayed at the Edinburgh Zoo. Her name was Mercedes. I visited that city when she had been in residence for about 4 years. Never thought to buy a postcard, though. Mercedes had been rescued from a village in northern Canada, where she had gone in search of food, coming very close to being shot in the process. In response to criticism from animal rights activists, the decision was made to move Mercedes to the Highland Wildlife Park in Kincaid. After 25 years of confinement, Mercedes transitioned to the 3.6-acre enclosure in 2009. Mercedes was 30 years old when osteoarthritis and senility brought her long life to an end. You might say she made the most out of her 20s, and considering the future for polar bears down here, maybe she got out just in time. It's not often I choose song lyrics for the parting word. I generally feel that cheats them. You need the music. An exception here. These particular lines were written by someone in their 20s speaking with the authority of age. I'll take the fact that the writer apparently identifies with the words over 40 years later as an indication they still might have something to say. And so, next time.
Rows and flows of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and they snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Moons and Junes and Ferris wheels, the dizzy dancing way that you feel, as every fairy tale comes through. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show. And you leave them laughing when you go. And if you can, don't let them know. Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take, illusions that I recall. I really don't know love. I really don't know love at all. Say I love you right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds, I've looked at life that way. Oh, but now old friends, they're acting strange, and they shake their heads and they tell me that I've changed. Well, something's lost, but something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. I really don't know life. I really don't know life at all.
Production support for Porch Light with Tom Rusnowski comes from Smithville. Fiber internet, streaming TV, home security and automation in southern Indiana. More information at smithville.com. And from Gilbert Construction, specializing in restoring, remodeling, and revitalizing Bloomington area homes since 1994. More information about Gilbert Construction by calling 812-876-8110 or on the web at gilbertbuilt.us. Porchlight is engineered by our radio audio director, Mike Paskash. Our executive producer is John Bailey. Visit us at wfiu.org/porchlight.